And we're holding on Ein Hey Amud Aleph, the 10th line. We learned yesterday two brises. One said that, so now we've been talking about if a woman has Nadarim and her husband, a man was Makadish, a woman, on condition that she doesn't have any Nadarim in effect, and it turns out that she does, then that's grounds to say that the Kedushin weren't valid and to say that she might not even need a get. So now we said, and we said the same thing as far as Mumim, which we're going to talk more about the Mumim further down on the Amud. So now we had one Braisa that said that if she went to be Matir Neder, then the Kedushin are valid because now the Nadarim have been taken away. On the other hand, if it was a matter of Mumim and she had gone to a doctor to have the Mumim taken care of, then that still wouldn't allow the Kedushin to be valid. And we said the reason is because the Chacham, when he takes away the Neder, takes it away as if it never existed, whereas Mumim, the fact is they did exist before. Then we had, though, another Braisa that said that even... And we had another Braisa that said that even... That even when it comes to Nadarim, if the Chacham was matter them, then it still doesn't make the Kedushin valid retroactively. So what is it? So we discussed one reason. We discussed one possibility is that the two Braises are according to the Meir and Rabbi Elazar respectively, where the Meir would be saying that the Meir doesn't mind that a man says that a man doesn't mind that his wife has to suffer a loss of dignity going to Beis Din. Therefore, so she goes and be in his matir neder, no big deal. Whereas Rabbi Elazar holds that a man doesn't want his wife to suffer that loss of dignity, and therefore, once there were nadarim, then Rabbi Elazar is going to say basically there's nothing further we can do about it. So now the Gemara gives another answer. Rav Amar, Hocha be'isha chashuva askinan. We're talking about over here about an important woman. This that we say, that if she went to a chacham and he was matir, then it works and the kedushin are valid, is talking about by an isha chashuva. Or rather, that we say that she's not makodosh, we'd be talking about an isha chashuva, a woman from an important family. De Omar, so he says, lo nichali de'iktza b'kreviseha. After all, I may not be able to marry her, but I don't want to be also forever to marry her relatives. We know once a man is Makadish, a woman, he becomes also in various relatives of hers. He can never marry her mother. He can't marry her sister as long as she's alive, her daughter, or any of a few other relatives. So therefore, so he may be saying that, even if he doesn't care whether she goes to Beis Din and suffers a loss of dignity by that, he can still say, if she be isha nadronis, I don't want a woman who regularly makes nadronim. On the other hand, I don't want to have to give her a get, because if I do, then I'm going to be also in her mother or her sisters or other, so I'd rather the kedushin don't take effect in the first place. Which there's some discussion about that among different mefarshim. So I mean, so why was he makadish her in the first place? So the Rosh talks about essentially that we have a suffix whether he would have wanted the kedushin to be valid or not. So when it comes to an isha chashuva, we assume that the suffix is that he himself would rather that he had never been makadish her in the first place, such that now, at least, even if he can't marry her, he can still marry into this important family. He can marry her mother or her sister or what have you. And then the Avnei Miluyim deals with that. He says, listen, I mean, after all, why would he want to give her a get unnecessarily? Then he's going to have to give her a ksuba as well. So he learns that it's not so much a matter of a suffix, it's more a matter of that what he's saying to begin with, whether he wants the kedushin to even be chal. So that would explain. So we have one braisa saying that if the rov is matir the neder, then fine, the kedushin are valid. That would be when she's from a regular family. So even if the kedushin are valid and the result is he has to give her a get, no big deal. He wanted to marry her, but if he can't marry her, he's not that interested in marrying anybody else from her close relatives, as opposed to if she's from an important family, then he would rather be able to marry one of the other ones. So therefore we can assume that his kedushin to begin with, that he wanted the kedushin to not be valid in case there was any problem of nadarim. And therefore, even if she goes and is matir neder, then it still doesn't make that the kedushin are valid. Okay, so the Gemara says Yehochi Sefer. If you're going to learn like that, look at the next part of the Braisa. The Braisa continues that on the other hand, if the husband had nadarim and the wife didn't want to marry him when he has nadarim in effect, but he went to a chacham and was matir neder, so she didn't want to marry him because he had mumim, she discovered he had mumim, and now he goes to a doctor and the doctor heals him. So Mekudeshes, we say that in either of those cases, she's Mekudesh. Now, if it's a matter of Roitza Adam or Ein Roitza Adam, she's Bazi Ishtabit based in that, at least in the case of Nedarim, that he cares or doesn't care whether his wife has to go to Beis Din, which is undignified. Okay, for men, it's not undignified to go to Beis Din, Tosfos says. They go to Beis Din all the time. But if you're telling me that it's a matter of that whether they would like the Kiddushin to be in effect because they want to be able to marry somebody else in the family, after all, also, when a man is Mekadosh a woman, not only he becomes also to marry some of her close relatives, she also becomes also to marry some of his, even if they get divorced or widowed. She wouldn't be allowed to marry his father or his brother, etc. So wouldn't you have the same issue? So listening ain't a Mekudeshes. So by that logic, the second Braisa should be saying that she's not Mekudesh in that case either. And say that we're talking about over here a man from an important family, and she would be saying, I don't want to be also in his relatives. So if we use the same logic, if Rava is using the same logic to say why in the second Braisa, even if she's Matu Nedir, then she's not Mekudesh, then why wouldn't the same thing apply in reverse when he makes a neder or he has a mum and then he gets it taken care of? And the answer is, ihi b'chodahu nichala. The answer is because she'll be more satisfied with her husband even if he's a lower quality. In other words, women are less picky about these kinds of things when it comes to choosing a husband than men are when it comes to choosing wives. So even though he has nedarim and he has mumim, or he has mumim, but if he got them taken care of and therefore right now they're not an impediment to the marriage, then therefore we can assume that she's not going to be so picky as to say, I don't want to be married on that basis. Kiddur Ish Lakish. And that works because like what Ish Lakish says, Da'amar Ish Lakish, where he says the expression, Tav L'Mesav Tandu M'L'Mesav Armalu. It's better to sit to live as two bodies than to live as an amana. So this is a popular women's expression. It's better to have another body to live with rather than to live alone like a widow. So therefore, even if the husband is of lesser quality, he had nedarim or he had mumim, as long as he got them taken care of, then she's not going to be as picky. So the Gemara brings in this connection a few other expressions like that, a few other popular expressions that show that a woman is usually satisfied with her husband, even if other people would consider him like of lesser quality. So Abayama, the Shemana Gavra, even if her husband is small like an ant, Kursei Becharosa Romila, still she puts her chair together with the important ladies of the town. In other words, like she's able to say, look, I have a husband just like you do. So even if everybody else is going to look and say, Oichmer, a husband, he's tiny like an ant, nevertheless, she's proud of him. She's proud of the fact that she has a husband. And therefore, like she considers herself, I deserve to sit with the important balabustas of the town. Rapapa says a different expression in this connection. De nafsa gavra, even if her husband is only a nafsa, meaning somebody who combs wool, which is Rashi says umanus ma'usa, it's a very degrading kind of job. Even so, tikaya b'siyofid b'av v'tesim, she'll still invite him to the threshold of the house and sit together with him in full view of everybody. In other words, again, like she wants to show off, look, I'm married, I'm not one of those old maids, even if everybody else considers my husband to be low class because all he does is comb wool for a living. The Aruch gives a different explanation that nafsa means like he watches turnips. So he watches a field of turnips to make sure that nobody steals them. Similarly, Rav Ashi Amar Dekalsa Gavra. Rav Ashi says even if her husband is from a family that everybody mocks, kalsa in the Lashon, the word kilos sometimes means to mock and to make fun of. She won't even require from him lentils for her pot, even though lentils are a very cheap food. The same way, in other words, like she's eager enough that she should be considered married, and she doesn't care even if he can't provide me lentils for my pot. Again, Rashi explains that kolsa means that he comes from a family that everybody makes fun of. The Aruch again explains that kol a little different. That kolsa means like he watches cabbages for a living. Anyway. Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Now, why Taka should it be that? Why should we assume on such a on such a general as such a general thing that all women are going to be happy with such a low class husband? The reason is v'cholin mezanes v'tolus baleim, because all these women now have the ability to be mezana, and then when they have a baby, then they can attribute the baby to their husband. So therefore, like they get that out of that. Even if their husband is otherwise a low class person, nevertheless they still have that advantage, and therefore we can assume that a woman would rather be married than not. Which, okay, I mean, the Radal points out in his notes in the back of the Gemara, you're not going to say that an Isha Kshera, for example, is going to have that mentality. So fine, we're talking about even if she herself is, we're talking about Davka when she herself is a low-class person, and so is he. At least we have that. Obviously, when people are better quality, people with better midas are going to want to be married for better reasons than that. Point being, though, in other words, that women, we're saying, are less picky in their choice of husband, and therefore, even if he had an adorim, or even if he had a woman, as long as he got the neder revoked by the rav, or as long as he got the mum healed, then we assume she's not going to mind that it was formerly like that. Whereas he would mind it more. And again, according to the first explanation in the Gemara, we said it's a matter of does he want his wife to go to Beis Din and suffer a loss of dignity being mater neder. And according to that would be why the two Braises would be arguing on that. Meanwhile, as far as Mumim, we would say for sure he considers it unattractive that she ever had this Mum. And according to Rabbah's explanation, it's a matter of whether she's from an important family or not. Does he want to have the loophole to be able to marry her close relatives if things don't work out with her? Okay. We said in the Mishnah, kol mumim shepoislin v'chola. We said any mumim that passel a koyin to do the avodah also passel a woman. In other words, the husband can use that to say, therefore, that the kedushin was not valid. So Tana, we learn in a Braisa, hoisifu aleihen, the Chachamim added, besides the ones that passel a koyin for the avodah, also zeya, also excessive sweating, she's sweating all the time, v'shuma, or a wart, v'reyach hapeh, and bad breath. So I'm going to ask Vahani Bakani like Pasli. You're telling me that such mumim don't passel a koyin as well? Vahatanan. We learn in a Mishnah in Bechoris when it lists all the mumim of the koyinim, has zokin, a koyin who's old, so old the Gemara says that his hands shake when he tries to do anything. Vacholah, or when he's sick, and he can't stand straight because he's so weak. Vahamazuham, or when he's smelly. Utnan. So right now the Gemara is assuming that excessive sweat and bad breath is included in mezuham, is included in sweaty. So we see that at least two of these three things are included by the koyanim already. Utnan, and the Mishnah goes on to say there, mumin elu ben kvuin ben oven post psulin ba'adam. These mumim, whether they're an ongoing thing or whether they're a temporary thing, either way they passel a person, they passel a koyan from doing the avodah. So what are you saying? They added that these things passel a woman and not a koyin. The answer is Amar Yosef like Kasha can bezeya iveres can bezeya she'ena iveres. It depends whether we're talking about excessive sweat that can be removed easily. So for example, Tosfos says she can bathe, or the koyin can bathe, or she can bathe, and then that'll take away the excessive sweat. Can bezeya she'ena iveres, and then you have the other kind where even after a bath, she's still going to be just as sweaty as before. So then the point is, in other words, so with a koyan, he's only occasionally doing the avodah, so therefore he can take a bath before he goes to do the avodah, whereas the woman is with her husband all the time. Tosfos actually mentions that maybe one possibility is if it's overus, if it's easy enough to remove. Tosfos says another possibility of overus could mean that it's only a temporary condition. So therefore, so it's not considered so miustic that such a person should be possible for the avoda. So even if he didn't, so even if right now he's sweaty, he might still be kosher for the avoda. Mezuham would be zeya she'en overus, would be where it's a permanent condition. Whereas with a woman, it wouldn't matter, even if it's non-permanent. That's Tosfos' second explanation. Rav Ashi says, anyway, the premise of your question, Rav Ashi says, is flawed. Zeya mezuham karamis. How are you bringing a contradiction between sweaty and mezuham, which means smelly? Hossam Gabi Koyanim, when we talk about the Koyanim, we don't explicitly say that it's that they're sweaty. We said that they smell bad. It's not so much the sweat that's the problem. It's a bad body odor. Well, Efshala Abra B'Kiho D'Chamra. Well, they can remove that for a while. They can remove it by applying some vinegar. So in other words, fine. Let him, before he goes and does the avodah, he'll wash off his skin. He'll rub his skin with vinegar, and that'll take away the smelliness. And then he'll be able to do the avodah. And as far as bad breath also, he can hold a peppercorn in his mouth, which will overcome the bad smell, and then he'll be able to do the avodah. And again, the Kohen is only doing the avodah on a temporary basis. He's not going to be doing it for days on end. So that kind of thing, every time before he goes to do the avodah for that day, and usually he's only going to be doing the avodah for one day anyway, then fine, he can rub his skin with vinegar, and he can put a peppercorn in his mouth. But with a woman, that's not possible. She's around her husband all the time. So even if one time she's able to use the vinegar or the peppercorn, another time, that's not going to help. So therefore, those things can be considered a mum by a woman in a way that they wouldn't be by a kohen. Okay, so that's that then. So by a kohen, even if he's excessively sweaty, or even if so what Rav Ashi is saying, by a kohen, being excessively sweaty in and of itself is not a mum. What it is by a kohen, if he smells bad when he goes to do the avodah, then that's considered a mum. So fine, as long as he does something to take away the bad smell before he does the avodah, then we're good. By a woman, though, we're saying that excessive sweatiness or bad breath, those in and of themselves are considered a mum, because there's no long-term way to fix them. Obviously, if there is a long-term way to fix them up, then it's like any other mum that's healed. But if it's an ongoing thing and there's no long-term way available to fix it up, then the fact that you can fix it up short-term doesn't help. Okay, next, the Gemara asks, Hai shuma hechidanya. You said that a wart or a mole is considered a mum by a woman, but not by a kohen. So hechidanya, what's the scenario? If this wart has hair growing on it, then in both cases, for a kohen, it'll also be considered a mum and pasel him. And if there's no hair in it, then let's consider the size of it. If it's a large wart, and we'll see soon how large is large, then again, it's going to pasel a kohen as well as a woman. So we can't say they added it add to the list of ones that passel a woman. And if it's a small wart, then either way, it's not going to passel them. So what is the scenario where we're talking about a wart that wouldn't passel a kohen, but it does passel a woman? The Tanya, now we learn in a braisa more clearly. If the wart has hair in it, then it's considered a mum as far as a woman and as far as a kohen. Ein basayer, if it doesn't have hair in it, gdoila hareza mum, then if it's a large one, then it's considered a mum. Ktana ain's a mum, but if it's small, then it's not considered a mum. And be'izoi gdoila, what is considered a large wart for this purpose? Pirashim Shem Gamliel, ad ki iser haytauki. So the Shem Gamliel says, if it's up to the size of an iser haytauki, then it's considered small. Any larger than that, it's considered large. An iser haytauki is a small coin that they used in those days. You have at the beginning of Kiddushin, it talks about that a pruta is 1/8 of an iser haytauki. So there was a small coin that they used in those days, maybe the size of a dime, maybe smaller, whatever. We don't know. The poskim actually don't know the exact size of it. It comes up here and there in other areas of halacha. But in any case, so fine. The point is, but what's the case where you would have a wart that would be big enough to passel a woman, but not big enough to passel a kohen? The answer is, Amar Yosef ben Chanina, but in medes al padachta. The answer is, suppose the wart is on her forehead, so it's very noticeable. So let's say, so it's small, there's no hair in it, but the fact that it's on her forehead is, the husband would be likely to find it repulsive. Well, the question is, on the contrary, padachta rov and ifayasu. On the other hand, if it's on her forehead, he must have seen it before he was Makadish her. So obviously he was willing to accept and marry her even with that. So what's the problem? How can he now claim that it's a mekachtos? And the answer is, I'm going to pop it by a medes latachas kippa shel roisha. The answer is, Rapapa says, we're talking about it's high up on her forehead, so it's underneath her tichel. Or kippa is more like a cap or a yarmulke type thing that women would wear. Even unmarried women would sometimes wear such a thing. So therefore, v'zimnin de mischazia, v'zimnin de la mischazia. So sometimes it's visible, sometimes not. So the husband now has the ability to claim that I didn't know of this wart beforehand because until now it happened to be covered under her cap. And now, punkt, I happen to see it. So that would be the case then where it passes her. So even though it's small, so again, such a wart on a koyin, if it was small and didn't have hair, wouldn't passel him to do the avoda. But with a woman where the husband wants her to be attractive, then it would be considered a mum. Okay. So the Gemara continues with some other examples of mumim. Amen of chista, hom milsim gavre rabba shneili. I heard the following statement from a great man, a great Talmud Chacham, and the Gemara interjects Manu Rab Shila. Who is that? That would be Rab Shila, who lived in the time of Rab. Anyway, the vote was Noshcha Kelev, if previously a dog had bitten her, Benasim Akemet Salekis, and now you have a scar where the dog had bitten her, Hareza Mum, then that's also considered a Mum, and the husband has the ability to say that if I didn't know of it beforehand, then it's a Mum and it's a Mekach Toros. Another one, Amr Rav Chista himself says, Koil Ova Beisha Hareza Mum. If she has a very deep voice, then that's also considered a Mum. A woman should usually have a higher pitched voice. So if she has a deep man-like voice, then that's considered a mum. Shenema ki kolach ariv umarech nove. As we find the pasuk in Shir HaShirim that compares a woman's voice and a woman's appearance, your voice is sweet and your appearance is beautiful. So we see that there's a certain comparison. Just like the husband has the right to claim that her appearance is off-putting, the same way he can say that her voice is off-putting. This pasuk is also brought in Brachas as the source of the halacha of kol b'isha erva. That a woman's voice is usually considered attractive and is considered an erva, just like parts of her body that are supposed to be kept covered. Okay, another one. Tani Rav Nosson Bira, Rav Nosson Bira taught in a braisa, the words ben dade isha tefach, a tefach between a woman's breasts. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that that's a normal way, or does that mean that that's a mum? So Rav Acha Brei D'Rava, learning in front of Rav Ashi, thought that braisa meant that that's the normal amount. So if she has a tefach between her breasts, then that would be a normal thing, and that's not a mum. Omelet Rav Ashi gami mumin tanya. But Rav Ashi tells him, no, you should know that braisa was actually taught in the context of mumin. So v'kama, so then what would be the normal amount between them? I'm going to buy a sholosh etzbois. Rabbi says the normal space between one and the other would usually be three etzbois. A tefach, which is instead four etzbois, is already considered a mum. And the Gemara says, Tanya, Rav Nosson Omer. We learned in a braisa that Rav Nosson says, here's another one. Kol isha shadat. Now, these obviously also don't apply to koyanim. These are the ones involving the breasts, obviously apply only to women. So Tanya, Rav Nosson. Rav Nosson Omer, kol isha shadadeha gasim mishal chavreseha, a woman whose breasts are larger than most women's, hareza mum, then it's considered also a mum. V'kama, so how much larger does it have to be considered a mum? Omer Rav Miyashia, bab reid, Rav Yishor ben Levi, mishmeid, Rav Yishor ben Levi, so Rav Miyashia, the grandson of Rav Yishor ben Levi, says in the name of his grandfather, Rav Yishor ben Levi, the amount is tefach, if there are tefach longer than most women's. So the Gemara asked me, Ika Kai Gavna, do you even have such a thing? Do women really have such long breasts in the first place? And the answer is ain't. As a matter of fact, yes. He says, I saw a certain Arab woman, she flung her breasts behind her back, and nursed her son. So apparently she was carrying him on her back, as many people do in the world, and her breasts were long enough that she was actually able to sling them over her back, and her son could nurse that way rather than having to bring him to her front. So yes, we can see that it can happen, that they're larger than normal, and we're saying that would be considered a mum. Okay, since we mentioned something that Amiyashia, the grandson of Rabbi Yishor ben Levi, said, so the Gemara brings another thing from him, a piece of Agadah. Amr of Miyasha bar Brej Rabbi Yishor ben Levi. Sorry, I skipped a line. The pasuk says, "Ulatsiyan ye omar ish vi ish yuladba." The pasuk says about Sia and about Yerushalayim, it will be said about it, a man and a man was born in it. So what does that mean? Rashi explains, we have a number of psukim in Tanakh that express the idea that when Mashiach comes, the Goyim will bring all the Jews from their countries to Eretz Yisrael. And even the most assimilated Yid will be brought by the Goyim to rejoin the Jewish people. So now, and the pasuk is describing that all the nations in the world are going to be saying, wherever they find a yid, this one is from Bnei Tzion, Ish v'ish yulabra. This man, this person and that person was born there in Tzion, and we have to return him to his home country. So Amrav Miyasha, Rab Reja, Rav Shimon Levi, it means, why the double expression, Ish v'ish, Echad ha-nolad ba, ve'echad ha-metzap l'r oisa. It's because it's describing two kinds of people. One who was actually born in Eretz Yisrael, and the other one who's looking forward to seeing Yerushalayim. Both of them are considered children of Tzion, and both of them will be brought by the Goyim, and both of them will be participating in the Gula Amitis Vashlein. So, in fact, Marsha points out over here, there are actually, if you look at the Pesukim before and after it, we're familiar with this capital, of course, we say it before benching on Shabbos and Yom Tov. So like this, we have the Pesukim before it, for example, as Kirahabu Vavel Leyoidai, usually a person calls himself by his native country, but by Tzion, it's not a matter of whether he was born by Tzion, we call a person a citizen, a person of Tzion, even if he was never there in his life, because he's Mitzapel L'Roysa. And because we're looking forward to that Hashem will reestablish Tzion as the center, as with the Beis Mikdash and as the center of Kedusha in the world. And then we continue. Hashem Yisper B'Chasev Amim. Hashem counts among the nations each one. A person was born in New York, then he's a New Yorker. A person is born in another place, then he's considered a citizen of that place. But the Yid who was born in a different place is considered, he's written down as if he was born in Tzion. So that's the connection with Psukim. The famous story they tell about Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld. In his times, the rulers of Eretz Yisrael, the Turks, and afterwards the British, were making things difficult as far as Jews migrating to moving to Eretz Yisrael. But if you could swear in front of a court that you were born in Eretz Yisrael, then you would have a much easier time getting in. So they asked Rabbi Yosef Chaim whether you can do that. He says, on the basis of this Gemara, yes, even if you were born in Poland or Russia or America or whatever it is, and you never saw Eretz Yisrael in your life, but because you're Mitzap Eloroisa, therefore, yes, the Pasuk counts you as though you were born in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, yes, you can truthfully swear in front of the court that you were born there and make it easier for yourself to get an affidavit to go to Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Amar Abaya, v'chad minayu odif ketrei minah. Abaya says, you should know, when a Yid moves from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael, Abaya is saying that one, you should know that one Yid who was born and grew up in Eretz Yisrael is as good, is as great in knowledge of Torah as two of us Chachamim above. Because Avira to Eretz Yisrael Machim, the heir of Eretz Yisrael, makes a person wiser. Omar Rava, and Rava says, V'chad minan, now you have further, when you have one of us, one Yid from Bavel, he solik lahasim, when he moves there to Eretz Yisrael, odif ketrei minayu, he ends up being as good in quality as true regular Bnei Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? The Ritva points out, one reason is because, so to speak, like he's left the truma of Eretz Amim, of Chutz Laaretz, and come to Eretz Yisrael, so therefore he has like the advantage of Baal Tshuva as well. Another point as well, Mephoshim make, is in Bavel, they had a more aggressive way of Torah learning. In Eretz Yisrael, as we know, if we compare the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, in Eretz Yisrael, they were more, they got along better. They didn't look quite so much to slug up and prove that my position is right and so forth. They went about it more bedakli noy. So therefore, when a Yid from Bavel moves to Eretz Yisrael, he has the advantages of both. He brings the sharp method of learning that they had in Bavel, and he also has the air of Eretz Yisrael that makes him wiser. So therefore, he winds up twice as good as any of the Chachamim of Eretz Yisrael. Ben Yehoyada says an interesting vort on this. He says, that's why we know Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael. He says, Ebrano, let me go over into Eretz Yisrael. Now, based on our Gemara, it comes out that a person from Chutz Laaretz who comes to Eretz Yisrael winds up being four times as good as he was before. Because we're saying a Yid from Eretz Yisrael is twice as good as a Yid from Chutz Laaretz, and a Yid from Chutz Laaretz moved to Eretz Yisrael is twice as good as the Chachamim from Eretz Yisrael. Good morning, Abba Moshe.
Good morning.
So, where are we? Yeah, we started at 6. I put it on the WhatsApp group. I guess you didn't see it. Sorry. These days, because of Slichus, we have to start early, you know. So it comes out that a Yid from Bavel who moves, or any place in Chutz Laaretz, who moves to Eretz Yisrael, winds up being four times as good as the people of Bavel who remained in Bavel. Therefore, Moshe uses the expression Ebra na. Ben Yehoyada says Ebra is Melosh is the same letter as rearranged as Arba. So Moshe is saying, let me go into Eretz Yisrael, and then I'll be four times as good as I am now. And so Rava says, I'll prove it to you. After all, we see Rabbi Yirmiya, when he was here in Babel, he didn't even know what the Chachamim are saying. He was one of the lesser Talmidim. And then when he went there, when he moved to Eretz Yisrael, then he became so great in Torah, Korilon Bavloi Tipshoi, then he calls us, his former countrymen in Babel, he calls us foolish Babylonians, meaning that he became not only did he have the advantages of a Yid in Eretz Yisrael, but he had the advantage that a Ben Chutz La'aretz has when he moves to Eretz Yisrael. So he became so much greater, four times as great, as we're saying, as he did before, to the extent where now Rav is saying he's able to look down on us Chachamim in Babel and put us in our place. So again, all of this came in because we were saying, this was all connected with something that a Miyasha, the grandson of Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said, where before that we had a halacha that was relevant to our Gemara. Mishnah says, now we were talking about that the husband was Makadish the wife and discovers that she has mum. Now, obviously, there can be different. There can be a case where the husband knew about these mumim and was willing to accept them. So now, obviously, he wouldn't have the ability to claim later that, you know what, I don't like these mumim. I want to say that the kedushin are not valid, or that I should have a reason to divorce her without a ksuba, etc. So now, our Mishnah is going to deal with if there's a suffix when these mumim came about. Now, obviously, there are some mumim where there can't be such a suffix. If she has an extra finger, for example, there's no question she had it from when she was born. But you can have mumim that may have developed later in life. So the Mishnah says, if she developed the mumim when she was still in her father's house, so now the chosin is makadish her. Now later on, he discovers she has these mumim, and he says, I want out. I want the kedushin to be bottled, or I want to not have to give her the ksuba. Which, by the way, we had the other day. We had the machlokes of Av and Shmuel how to explain the previous Mishnah, whether we had one continuous case. He was Makadish or Al-Manas, she doesn't have mumim. He discovers that she has mumim, and then he married her without reiterating the condition, and he discovers she has mumim. Is that reason enough to be mevatel the kedushin? Or we said the other way of understanding it is there were two separate cases, one where he was Makadish or Al-Manas, that she doesn't have mumim, and then married her. And the second case would be where to begin with the Kedushin and the Nisuin were all done without any time. So the same machlokes would apply to our Mishnah as well. Anyway, so now when she's still in her father's house, there were mumim. So now if the father wants his daughter to be able to collect the ksuba during the Erusin, ha'av tzorech lo ha'biraya, shemishinis arisa ho'yu ba'mumin halavu, v'nistach v'sadeu. So the father would have to be bringing the proof that these mumim developed after the Erusin, and that it's the husband's tough luck. Nistach v'sadeh literally means his field was flooded, which is the expression that we used over and over in the first parak of our Masechta, where the husband, for example, the husband was claiming his wife's not a psula, and one possibility is because of something that happened after the Erusin. So in other words, so again, there was a year usually between Kedushin and Nisuin. So he was Makadisher. Now, later on, sometime during that year of Erusin, he discovers that she has mumim while she's still living at home. If the father wants that his daughter should be able to collect the ksubim in Erusin, he would have to bring proof that the mumim developed only after the kedushin. And then we would say that it's the husband's tough luck, and he can't use that as an excuse to break the kedushin. On the other hand, nichnasa l'rishus ha'baal, once she enters the rishus of the husband, meaning that they get married, or as we learned earlier in the Masechta, she's given to the shluchim of the husband to accompany her to the husband's place or whatever. Then if he discovers the woman, then if the husband wants to divorce her and say, I shouldn't have to pay her ksuba because it was mekachtos, then the husband would have to be the one to bring the proof that these mumim existed before the Erusin, and that it was a mekachtos, that he wouldn't have been mekadosh if he had known. That's what Rameir says. The Chum say it's not so simple. the husband to claim about mumin, but medvar mumin should assess it. That would only apply to mumin on covered parts of the body, because covered parts of the body, you can say he may not have known of ahead of time. Avob a mumin should be golui, but if there's mumin on exposed parts of the body, any yochel litoin, then the husband can't make any such claim, because then we can assume that he saw it ahead of time. Now, Tosfos points out that Rav Meir would agree, of course, when it's mumin shebegolui, why should he be able to, why should he obviously, like we said before about the wart, he must have seen it and he must have accepted it. So therefore, Tosfos says that Rav Meir would be arguing only about mumin shebeseser, only about mumim on covered parts of the body. Do we say that it depends where the mum was found when she was living at home versus when she's living with her husband? Or would we say, like a chachamim say, maybe the chachamim would say that he has a valid claim for it regardless? On the other hand, there are a number of Rishonim who learn that no, in fact, there are Talmud Rabbeinu Yona and other Rishonim learn that, in fact, Rav Meir might, in fact, be arguing about both of them. So Rav Meir might be saying the key thing is, when were the Mumim discovered? And the Chachamim would be saying that you have to also factor in whether it's Begolu or Vaseisa. Right. So a deep...
spoken to her before.
So that's a good point. Before she bring up, thank you. That if she has a deep voice, wouldn't have you discovered it before? One possibility that I saw to answer that is, till now she might have been speaking in a whisper when he first met her and then talked with her in the Kaddish, or maybe she was speaking in a whisper. So he didn't realize that she has that deep voice. That's a very good point, though. Yeah. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. The im yesh merchatz ba'oser ir. If there's a bathhouse in that city. And then he can't even claim that it was a mekach tos because of mumim uncovered parts of her body, because he can check her out with his relatives. He can ask his female relatives, his mother or his sister or whatever, when you're in the bathhouse together with her, take a look and see, notice whether she has any mumim. Now, the Rosh brings from Gaonim, actually the Rambam brings from Gaonim as well, that say maybe not even relatives, even if he just has friends in town, he can ask them. The Rosh endorses that and says that therefore, if there's a bathhouse in town, he can never claim on mumim shebaseser. The only way would be, the Rosh says, if you have places where the women keep themselves covered and bathe individually, even in the bathhouses. On the other hand, the Rambam says, no, come on, this kind of thing, a person doesn't go and entrust such a delicate thing to just any old woman that he knows, like his somebody else's wife or whatever. It would only be his own close relatives, his mother or his sister or whatever, that he would even say such a thing to them in the first place and trust their report. So therefore, according to the Rambam, if he doesn't have close female relatives, even if there's a bathhouse in town, then he would be able to claim mumim shebaseser. So again, according to Tosfos, Rav Meir is arguing only on mumim shebaseser. So he's holding, in other words, that you can't trust this thing of checking who out in the bathhouse, and the Chachamim say you can. And then there are Rishonim who say that in fact Rav Meir would argue on the whole thing, the Chachamim. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Taima de Maisia Avraya." Now, what are we saying in the first part of the Mishnah? If the mumim were noticed when she was living at home, so we said the father would be the one who has to bring the proof that the mumim existed, that the mumim came into existence only after the kedushin, and it's the husband's tough luck. Hole Maisia Avraya, implying that if the father could not bring such an ayah, Habal Mehaman, then we would trust the husband and say that it developed before the Kiddushin and he has a right to say that it's Mekach Tos. Well, Mani, now who would that be like? Now we learned back in the first parak of our Masechta, we had several machlokes in of Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Gamliel along those lines, where you have various cases over there where there's an argument between the husband and the wife. So, for example, he discovers that she's not a basula. He discovers that she's not a basula. So, one possibility is she claims, for example, that it's mukas eight, and he's saying that no, you had relations, or she's claiming that it was after the erusin, and he's saying it was before the erusin. So, in all those cases, we said Rav Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer say we believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua says loy mipia anuchai, and we can't necessarily accept what she's saying as valid. She'd have to bring a proof. So now Mani, so who would our Mishnah be going like, saying that the husband has to actually, that the father has to actually bring a proof and otherwise she can't collect Tuksuva? That would be Rabbi Yeshua. He Amar Lami Pionu Chayin. Necessarily, that would have to follow Rabbi Yeshua's opinion, who said in those Mishnayos in the first Perek that we can't necessarily accept her argument on her say-so. We need proof. But a masefa, but look at the next part of our Mishnah, where it continues, nichnas al rishus habaal, we say once she enters the husband's rishus, habaal tzarech lo habi raya, then we say the husband is the one who has to bring the raya, that the mum existed before the kedushin, and that it was mekaftos, not that it developed now, which seems to imply, time into maisi habaal raya, so only if the husband brings the proof, then he could say he doesn't have to pay the ksuba, implying, implying if the husband is not able to bring such proof, then we would say that the father is believed, that she didn't have this mum before, that this mum developed only after the erusin, and that it's the husband's tough luck. Well, I saw in the Rav Gamliel, Draman and Menes. That part of the Mishnah seems to be going like Rav Gamliel, who says that we do believe her. So what is it? Who is our Mishnah like? Rabbi Yeshua or who is our Mishnah like Rabbi Yeshua or like Rav Gamliel? Amar Rabbi Elazar Tavra. So Rabbi Elazar says Tavra, which means it's a contradiction. Misha Shonazu Lo Shonazu. Whichever Tana taught the first part of our Mishnah did not teach the other one, and vice versa. Meaning in the Reisha, when we're saying she's living at home, then Rabbi Yeshua would say it doesn't matter whether she's living at home or Nichnas Al Rishus Habaal. Either way, it would always have to be the father who brings the raya if he wants to collect the ksuba. Otherwise, we would say the husband is muchzik in the money, amotz mechavel of a raya, and therefore you can't take it away from him without a solid proof. Whereas Rav Gamliel would say, in both cases, we would say that according to Rav Gamliel, we would say that not only when she's living with her husband, but even when she was living at home, still we would say that if the husband wants to not pay her ksuba, she has a chazaka, after all, that at one point in her life she didn't have that mum called a cheskas haguf, and therefore Rav Gamliel would be following that. So Rav Elazar is saying it's a contradiction. You're right, the Mishnah cannot possibly be according to one Talmud. Tosfos gives a different explanation. The word Tavra brings from Ben Hanano that it means a shvua. So like Rabbi Elazar is swearing, it can't possibly be that our Mishnah is according to one time. On the other hand, Omar Rava, on the other hand, Rava says, so Rava says, now what Rava is going to say now is sort of an introduction to what he's going to say later in order to explain our Mishnah. So first he's going to give us some background about what Rabbi Yeshua holds, and then Rava is going to explain why our Mishnah is not necessarily self-contradictory like Rabbi Elazar is saying, but rather we can make it work all according to Rabbi Yeshua. So first, Amar Rava, Loi Tamer Rabbi Yeshua Loi Ozo Basa Chazaka De Gufa Klal. You shouldn't think when Rabbi Yeshua says in all those cases in the first parak that we don't believe her, it's not because he doesn't hold of Chazaka De Gufa, where there's no cheskas moment against it. Ella, kilo ozer Rabbi Yeshua, basa chazaka de gufa. You know when Rabbi Yeshua is saying in all those cases in the first parak that we ignore the chazaka of the guf, the fact that in those cases that she was born a b'sula, or the fact that in our Mishnah that she was born without mumim, that would be hecha de ikka chazaka de mamoin, where there's a chazaka of mamoin opposing it. So in our Mishnah, on the one hand, she has a cheskas aguf, that she was born without mumim, and therefore that should be reason to say that we should assume the mumim happened as close as possible to when we discovered them, and therefore that the husband shouldn't have a claim of mekachtos. But against that, we have a chazaka of mumim. The husband is muchzik in the mumim, and for her to take it away from him, amotz mechavel of a raya. So that's when Rabbi Yeshua is saying that you don't believe. And the same thing in the first perek, where she's claiming a ksuba of 200, as a basula, and he's claiming you shouldn't get a ksuba at all, you should get a ksuba of 100, same idea. Aval hecha deleka chazaka de mamoina, but where there's no chazaka of mamon against it, also Rabbi Yeshua basa chazaka de gufa, then yes, even Rabbi Yeshua will go according to chazaka of the body and say that the symptom developed as close as possible to when we found it. How do we know this? Titania, we learn in a braisa in connection with the dinim of tzaras. Im baheres kodim l'seyo lovan, if the spot of tzaras was there on the skin and then the white hair developed within it, tomei, then we know from the psukim the person is tomei. Im seyo lovan kodim l'baheres, but if the other way around, if the white hair was there first and then the baheres developed, toher, then the person is toher, or not completely toher, but in other words, the white hair is not a definitive simon tumma. We need to have one of the other simone tumma, that tzaras has to spread, or it has to develop healthy flesh in the middle of it, or whatever, anyway. Suffolk, what if you have a Suffolk which came first? So the Mishnah says Tomei, then the person would be Tomei. But Rabbi Yeshua Omer Keha. But Rabbi Yeshua says Keha. Now, what does Keha mean? My Keha, Omer Rabba, Keha literally means dim. In other words, we consider as if the spot of tsaras became dimmer in color. Now we know there's only four shades of white that are considered tsaras. Anything duller than that is not tsaras. So Rabbi Yeshua, in effect, is saying we consider as though it was a duller spot of tsaras, and therefore he's tahor. Rashi brings from Rav Moshe Darshan a different explanation. The word is not keha with a kuf, but kiha with a kuf. In other words, he was like his teeth were on edge. Like when the Chachamim said tame, then like that aroused him to say, no, as a matter of fact, it can't possibly be tame. That's wrong. It has to be tahor. And then there's a different explanation that some Rishonim bring, that the word kiha can mean to gather together. Like he gathered together a bunch of Talmidim and they discussed it and concluded that Torah. Anyway, so we see now there you have a cheskas aguf, because there was a chazakah that before he was tahor. So therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua is saying this suffix is not enough to declare him tamei. So the same way Rabbi Yeshua is going to say a cheskas aguf is good enough. Only when there's cheskas mamon against it is there a problem. On the other hand, Rava Omar. So now Rava says Reisha kan nimtzu kan hoyu. The difference between the Reisha and the Sefer, it's not that they're contradictory, like Rav Elazar says. The difference is in the Reisha, the mumim were found over here in the father's house. So therefore, we assume that that's where they developed in the father's house. So that wounds the cheskas aguf. In other words, there's good reason to think that they existed before the Erison. Sefer nami kan nimtzu v'kan hoyu. And in the sefer, we discover them first in the husband's house. Therefore, we have more reason to say that they developed there. So it's not a matter. So yes, we do accept cheskas aguf, but we also have to consider where they were discovered and say that based on that is where we assume that they developed. And we'll continue in the Gemara tomorrow analyzing that point of kan nimtzu kan hoyu, which is a complex sugya in halacha. So we'll see how much we can do it justice, but we'll continue discussing that point. But in any case, Rava is saying you can make the whole Mishnah work like Rav Gamliel. You don't have to say like Rav Elazar said that half of it is according to Rav Yeshua and half according to Rav Gamliel.